Today, I'm going to interview some women who put together a foundation. It's called the Fontaine Foundation. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves and let you know what that foundation does. All right, Sarah.
I am Sarah. I am the founder and director / president of Fontaine Foundation, and we operate the Butte Diaper Bank program, which has been in operation since July of 2015.
And I want to say that again, Diaper Bank. Diaper Bank. Yes, which, you know, you might not think about a diaper bank. But when I read about it, I went, well, by gosh, those are important.
Yes, very much a necessity, kind of like food banks, unfortunately. Our goal is that someday we won't be necessary, we won't be needed. But in the meantime, we're just doing our best to try to meet the need in our community.
Uh-huh. And then, all right, Sarah, and all right, Melissa.
Hello, I'm Melissa Levy. I'm the vice president currently. I came on board with Sarah about 3.5 years ago. Maybe. Yeah. So the project started without me, but I was really glad to come on board and participate. I'm the only non-mother of the volunteers. So I have no children of my own, but I have plenty of children in my life, so I can relate to how they need to be taken care of and what it can be potentially lacking in their care. So I was really proud to join Sarah and be a part of this.
Great. And then Nicolette?
My name is Nicolette Barbita, and I joined Fontaine Foundation back when it was Butte Diaper Bank in 2017 after the birth of my third son. I initially got started with cloth diapering him, and in my research on cloth diapers, I stumbled across Diaper Need and kind of felt this internal call to action and started doing research to see if a diaper bank existed in our area. And that's when I found Butte Diaper Bank and reached out to Sarah and got started volunteering with the program.
So Sarah, did you have kids?
I did have a small child when we started. So my first introduction to Diaper in Need was actually through the Shalom Free Clinic. I was working with Nancy over there. She was the one who kind of first got me into kind of considering that was even a thing. And even when she told me about it and I went, oh yeah, Diaper Need, people need diapers. Like, I didn't really understand the extent of what Diaper Need was. So then it wasn't until after I had my son, Felix, I was reading an article in The Atlantic, and it was talking about the psychological impact of not being able to meet children's basic needs, specifically diapering needs. For me as a psych grad, I really was, you know, captivated by this idea that if you can't meet a basic need for your child, that will then have this like spider effect that will affect, you know, your confidence in being able to be patient, being able to feel like, you know, you're feeding them properly or you're clothing them properly, or if you're meeting their emotional needs just in general. And so my heart really went out to those moms, you know, being a mom was the hardest thing I'd ever done. And so, you know, and I wanted to do it correctly. I wanted to do everything right. And the fact that, you know, there are mothers out there who couldn't even put a clean diaper on their baby, you know, was just appalling to me. And the worst part was when I learned about how mothers can go and get assistance through WIC or food stamps or welfare, but they don't get diapers. Yeah, why are we putting food into their mouths and then turning around and not taking care of what's coming out? And the other thing that was really compelling for me was that children crying specifically from dirty diapers is one of the leading causes of child abuse. So when we're looking at this intergenerational trauma, how that's affecting what their outcome is going to look like later in life, you know, there's just so many factors that go into why this is important. And so initially I thought I was just going to do a diaper drive. And I posted on my Facebook, you know, oh, I feel a new project coming on, because I had done some other things, you know, for the Shalom Free Clinic when I was still in school and whatnot. Little did I know that there was no one that I could, even if I had done the diaper drive, who would I give the diapers to? You know, the Shalom Free Clinic had shut down their thrift store, which is where they had been operating out of to give people diapers on an informal basis. And so it really just came down to, I guess I'm starting a diaper bank. And I was really, really fortunate because there was another mother, Katie Fox, who responded to my kind of call to action on Facebook. And she's a real go-getter. She's very organized, much like Nicolette. And, you know, she just fueled the whole thing with kind of giving me the tools that I needed to really get going with it. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to continue, but her input was still really valuable for, you know, being able to found this entire, you know, organization.
And diapers are just so ongoing. It's not like something that you can, okay, here, you're done.
Well, and the statistics at that point were that mothers that were low income were spending about a third of their income on diapering need. And if you think about, you know, a third of your income, that's what we recommend that people do for housing. You know, your housing and your utilities isn't supposed to be more than about a third of your monthly budget. So when we're telling parents, oh, okay, we want you to use a third of your monthly budget, which is the same that you would expect to use for housing on a hygienic way to deal with poop, you know, that's insane to me. And so that was just kind of the you know, the real push that this is an unfair burden on parents. Another really important factor was that for a lot of mothers, you know, getting back into the workforce is affected by diapering need as well. A lot of daycares require that you have 2 weeks worth of diapers up front in order to even start having your child come to care. So not only are you shouldering the burden of trying to be able to pay for their care, but you have to come up and front load what are those diapers both at home and at that daycare. And so it just creates another barrier from parents being able to achieve independence.
Boy, it's something I hadn't thought about. Because you're right, it's and it's something that you could see even for the child. You'd leave a diaper on them a long time because you wouldn't want to have to use a lot of them.
Absolutely, which leads to all kinds of staph infections, sure, diaper rashes, and then again, that brings back a lot around the loop to, you know, the parents could potentially get in trouble for child neglect.
Sure.
You know, they could have CPS called them on them by the pediatricians, you know, for having excessive rashes. If they have barriers for to gaining access to a doctor, you know, like depending on whether or not they have, you know, Medi-Cal or Medicare, you know, the county insurance, you know, whatever the options are for them. If they don't have access to that healthcare, then it's another issue. And I do want to point out that diapering need is not just for babies. It's also, you know, anyone who's, has developmental delays and needs to use those as well. Elder care, you know, same thing, you know, so it does really affect all age groups as well.
One of the things you pointed out early on, Sarah, was that parents would miss doctor's appointments because they were embarrassed, because they didn't have a clean diaper to take their child to an appointment to. And that's shocking. That's so sad. And when you brought that to my attention when we first started this, you know, the general public doesn't know that WIC or public assistance does not cover diapers. It's very surprising and unfortunate.
Sure.
Yeah. And it tends to be one of those things that people associate morality with, right? Like being able to feed your children, being able to diaper them and that type of thing. And it shouldn't come down to a choice or a morale assignment on whether or not you're a good or bad person because you can, or you're having to choose whether you're going to feed your child or diaper them or keep a roof over their head.
But to think that you put that together, I can see that just a mission of the foundation that has to do with much more than just diapers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's actually where we decided to go from just being a diaper bank to being a full foundation. So we originally started with North Valley Community Foundation as our fiscal sponsors as a diaper bank. And so there was just all kinds of things that were really challenging for us as a diaper bank to be able to continue doing that. And so when we were looking at it, we went, well, we've already, you know, had all of these other limitations that are making this harder. And then let's really look at what's our goal here. We see that we need feminine products. We see that there's, you know, toothbrushes, toothpastes, underwear, clean socks, you know, all the things that, you know, even, you know, homeless individuals are in need of, you know, the working poor are in need of. And so when we're looking at how do we keep, you know, children safe and healthy, getting, you know, when they get into public school, public schools often will have entire closets that are devoted to meeting children's basic needs. You know, they'll have, you know, all of the things that I just mentioned kind of like stuffed in a closet somewhere. And then as they see the need, they'll try to get those things for that child. But what happens between when they're born and five, you know, the preschools definitely aren't stocking things to say, oh, well, when you come and pay us, we're going to go ahead and make sure your kids' basic needs are being met. So what I saw and kind of where I was coming from was I wanted to see that we could provide more assistance, you know, in a broader range of basic necessities than just the diapers. And that is our end goal. In the meantime, though, that's been our primary mission, is just trying to make sure that one basic need is being met for individuals.
And when you said incontinence, I mean, what size up do you have of diapers? Do you have
a diaper? The largest we have in our storage is a double XL.
For adults.
Okay. You're listening to a pre-recorded interview with three women from the Fontaine Foundation, and that is a diaper bank here in the North State. We'll take a break and then come back. Listening to KZFR 90.1 FM. This is North State Give and Take. We're going to return to our interview with Melissa, Nicolette, and Sarah from the Fontaine Foundation, which is a diaper bank here in the North State. If you've missed the interview or you'd like to hear any of the others, you can go to kzfr.org, go to Programs, go to Tuesday, and go to North State Give and Take, and you can find a recording there. All right, let's rejoin our ladies here at KZFR. So how do you do it? How do you gather them and how do you organize that?
Well, I have a couple of superheroes. We have another third superhero that's not currently able to come today because she's busy being a superhero at the hospital. But basically, we all kind of coordinate. The community steps up if they have, you know, a family member that doesn't need that size or it wasn't the right size or, you know, sadly, if the family member passes and then they suddenly find themselves with an abundance that they don't need, we usually coordinate those and get those and we keep them in storage units. And then as far as baby diapers, those are more easy to come by. You know, we definitely have a lot more support for babies because babies are more fun than, you know, elderly or developmentally disabled. You know, people have prejudice. You know, they don't want to talk about those things. They don't want to discuss, like, once you're not cute and roly poly anymore, you know, we don't want to talk about those things. And so there's this taboo around talking about, you know, why we need diapers. So part of it is trying to break that taboo, trying to, you know, kind of get that information out so they can donate the goods directly. The other option, which is our preferred option and makes our lives a lot easier, is funds. Just getting money donated is so helpful because we have buying power that we can utilize where we can get the supplies cheaper than if you went to a box store and bought it and then donated it to us. So that's one. The other is that we operate on a shoestring budget. I mean, we barely have enough that's covering our storage units, let alone trying to buy, you know, sizes that we don't have donated. So for example, right now we're running really low on sizes 5, 6, and then the larger size pull-ups. So, you know, for us, if we don't have the funds to replenish those, it means that we just can't meet that need. Unfortunately, and it's really sad to have to turn people away.
That's where those dollars really come into play, because the diapers themselves being donated is wonderful, but when we run into those situations where we are really low on a specific size, we can turn those dollars around to get exactly what we need versus continuing to backfill storage on maybe the other sizes that aren't as common. And we've absolutely found that, you know, as wonderful as it is that the hospital sends new parents home with a little bit of diapers to get them through perhaps the first couple of weeks of having a newborn. Babies grow really fast, and then they get to around size four in diapers and they kind of stagnate, and their growth starts to level off a little bit more. And so they spend more time in sizes four, five, six, and then eventually into pull-ups when we start potty training. So those, you know, we get the backfill on all the smaller sizes, but the keeping up with the bigger sizes has proven to be a little bit challenging.
Sure. Yeah. We also deal with a lot of trying to do the overhead of maintaining the storage because diapers take up a lot of space. Sure. And so, you know, the more that people donate of just the diapers instead of the money, that means that we have to try to come up with the funds to then store those said diapers, you know, whereas if we just have an account that sits there and every time we need to order more, we can order more. That's just a lot easier on us. Mm-hmm. The other thing I wanted to point out as I was listening to Nick is that one of the things that has also come up is that parents will potty train earlier than they should in an effort to try to get their kids out of those sizes. And so, because the cost per diaper goes up as the size goes up. And so one of the things that we found is that a lot of parents will push their children to try to potty train them earlier, but they'll have this push for it. And, you know, the effects on potty training too early is that it can lead to incontinence issues. And so, you know, children don't have the emotional intelligence yet and the ability to regulate and say, oh, I'm playing, but I need to stop and I need to go to the bathroom. And so what'll happen is they'll hold it. And then they just keep holding. And then it leads to all of these issues. And so that's another thing that I think is relevant to point out is just that, mm-hmm. you know, for these parents with these larger sizes, you know, that they're having to keep their, we don't want them to not keep their children in those sizes. You know, we want them, you know, the general rule of thumb is it, unless your child is 3.5 years old, unless they're choosing to potty train and they want to potty train, you should never push it. I mean, you can encourage, you can make it available, but never, you know, punish or otherwise, you know, intimidate your children into feeling like they have to potty train before 3.5, just because of that emotional development aspect.
Mm-hmm. Given the last few years of, you know, grand scale local traumas we've had, we've noticed that children have regressed. Yeah. And we've had yeah. families that have actually potty trained their children that have returned to needing our services because yeah. their children have returned to pull-ups or diapers. Yeah. So we did, after the fire, we did get a large influx of donations locally and from larger scale diaper banks. And that was wonderful. So it did cover the need for quite a while. Honestly, we rode that train for quite a while with diapers in stock, but we've hit a big lack of supply right now.
Yeah. Another one of those things that we don't think about when that, we talk about the fire and the results of it and things that people had to suffer through, but don't think we thought of that one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And again, with the pandemic, children are home.
Yeah.
So you're going through a lot more diapers with your small children at home and not at daycare or preschool. Well, preschool, they have to go potty trained, but daycare, where they're around other children who are potty trained. So they're encouraging themselves to potty train. And now they're, you know, at home, you know, back in diapers and, you know, hopefully learning, but, you know, that's another step back.
I see that you have like an application. Is that how you get a sense of what you need and the sizes you need and that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that we like to do is collect the data so that we can use that for grant writing purposes. So if we say, you know, 100 of our applications are for, you know, mothers who are living below the poverty line, which if we look at the poverty line, that's, you know, about $15,000 a year. So in Chico alone, if you can imagine trying to pay rent with, you know, $15,000 a year, you know, that's a big burden. And so what we look at is we say, well, we can look at the poverty levels of the families that we're helping. We can look at, are we helping working poor? Are we helping single mothers? Are we helping minority groups? And we can use that information to inform our grant writing purposes and what we're eligible for. So that's one big reason. The other is that we track based on the child, because we have two parent households, but we also have single parent households where, you know, maybe the parents are taking turns, like you get to get this distribution and I get to get the next one, but it's all for the same child. So we track based on the child's date of birth. So there's nothing that's going to exclude anyone from receiving the services on the application. It's more just for informing us of those things. And then also the other is that a lot of times, you know, your size can change, you know, especially when they're younger, very rapidly. So we try to encourage and kind of create a window of, you know, right before, 2 weeks before the distribution, you can go on, fill out that application, and then we know what we need. So if we need to order something or, you know, procure extra sizes or things like that, we have time to do that.
You have a distribution once a month.
Yeah, so we've kind of had to, unfortunately, limit what we are able to do, but we just didn't have the woman power to be able to handle calling everyone, scheduling them, and then the parents may or may not show up, and then we're having to follow up. So we ended up not being able to continue doing that. It was just too much of a strain. We didn't have enough volunteers to be able to maintain that. The other is that we haven't been able to get enough funds coming in to be able to have a location. I mean, if we had an office, you know, a place where we could store, you know, at least a couple weeks worth of diapers and distribute out of that, we could offer a lot more services. But because we're so limited, instead, what we do is we keep everything in storage. We go and we prep all of our diapers ahead of time. We load them into our cars. We drive them to a location where we have an agreement with that business owner to be able to use their space. And then we distribute out of our cars as we're sitting there. So, you know, it's really kind of just a lot of, you know, legwork on our end. And so trying to do that more than once a month is just a lot to try to sustain.
And people have to have an application in. Just while we're talking about application, it's online, right?
Online. Yeah. So if you go to the FontaineFoundation.org website, you'll see a Need Diapers Now option, and then you can do that application there, and that connects everything for us. And then we send out a confirmation email as a reminder. You know, you have distribution coming up on this day between, you know, 9 and 11 a.m. We usually try to do the last Saturday of every month to keep it consistent. If it's a holiday weekend, we'll bump it to the weekend before that. So we try to keep things as consistent and reliable as possible, but that can get kind of challenging.
And if you don't have a computer and an email.
Oh, we love this. So Butte 211 is our best friend. We cannot say enough wonderful things about Butte 211. So they actually offer not only services for those who do not have internet, but they also offer translation services as well, so that we're not excluding any groups.
Okay. Yeah. They do have to call Butte. Is it just 211?
Yep. You just dial 211 on your phone and it connects you right to a operator there. And then you let them know what your need is. And then they know to do the application. We work with them regularly. We also work with a number of other organizations that have, you know, caseworkers, social workers, where if it's a more rural area and they don't have transportation, if that caseworker is going out to their home, the caseworker can pick up all of the diapers ahead of time and take them out on the visit. So, you know, for a lot of the more remote areas, that tends to work really well with making sure that they're also receiving the assistance.
So the three of you, that's the core.
There's actually one more person.
Okay, yeah. There's four of you. And then do you need volunteers? Is that one of the things that you're looking for, or?
Yeah, I mean, we love having help. We have kind of a few volunteers that have kind of come in and come out over the years, and we appreciate their time. It is a lot to sustain. I mean, it's a big commitment for time. It's a big commitment emotionally. And to be honest, they're not always grateful. They're not always happy. They're not always nice, you know? And so you go and you're like, oh, I've poured my heart and soul into this, and I've done all of this for everybody. And then they're mad at us that we accidentally walked up to the wrong car to try to give them diapers, you know. So there really is a lot of an emotional toll that it takes on all of us. And so we do try to keep our core group, because that helps with just the continuity of planning and things like that. But we're always open to having other people bring their time and talents to the cause. Absolutely. Yeah.
Part of our challenge is in large part technology. And so that's one of the things that I wear the technology hat in the crew. And so, you know, we're making huge strides. We're partnering with a technology services firm, and they're doing pro bono work for us to help automate our application process, because today it takes on average, you know, 2 to 3 hours to go through all of the applications, compile the list, and then another hour, maybe 2 hours, just to do the prep work for the diapers. So when we start talking about trying to compile data for grant writing and giving out the information on the demographics that we serve, it's all manual right now. So, you know, it's a big deal to be able to bring in some automation, and it will help us to be able to expand our services even more into spaces like Sarah was talking about earlier with, you know, feminine hygiene products, maybe even support for families, connecting them with mental health services and parenting classes and the gamut of things that we could possibly expand our help and reach to.
The general premise was we wanted to find a way to become the village that we all need that a lot of us don't get to have. You know, we always joke around, oh, it takes a village to raise a kid, you know, and the reality is that in our society now, we have become very isolated, and that's not just because of COVID. It was happening well before that, you know, where if your family doesn't live close enough, or if you do have family that's close, but it's dysfunctional and you don't want that around you, you know, and you have to distance from a toxic situation. The reality is that, you know, as a mom, I have been distanced from my own family, and I have gone through parenting my two children alone. I don't have my village. I don't have people I can call and get assistance from. Sure. So part of the kind of route for Fontaine Foundation was we saw that there really is this need for a village. There is a need for all of these resources, and trying to kind of centralize that under one roof is our end goal.
If somebody does want to donate some money, how is the easy way? Is there a place on the website that says donate?
Yes.
Okay. So if they go to Fontaine, Fontaine foundation.org, they'll see a tab that says donate.
It's right up at the top next to the home button.
Okay. That's an important one we want to get out there. And, you know,
the other option is sending a check, because then we don't have to pay the fees on that electronic transmission. Okay. So the other option would be just writing a check to Fontaine Foundation, and our address is also on the website, and you could just mail that to us.
Well, you know, ladies, I just am so impressed with just how knowledgeable and your passion and dedication about it. I just think that you're so clear. I can see it's probably very rewarding for you as well, but I just love how you've put together something that's really important. And like you said, it's a funny thing that people don't want to talk about, but it's so important.
Oh, yeah. And it's really about, I want to make sure this is completely clear. I am just like the like on a ship. I'm that little mermaid that's like out on the front of the ship. And it really is about the team. The team is what, I mean, Nicolette, she organizes everything. She keeps us all on our toes and makes sure that we're doing what we need to be doing when we need to be doing it and meeting the requirements we need to keep going, you know. And Melissa, she's always helping keep our spirits up and, you know, bringing hand warmers when we're out and it's cold and, you know, coffee and things like that, you know. So it's like every single one of us, you know, Kirsten for years has handled all of the applications and those kinds of things. You know, we had another volunteer, Emily, that was helping quite a while. And so it really is about all of these different people bringing their specific skill set and really coming together and working together. You know, we have to have board meetings regularly where we're, you know, going over what's the latest grant, where are our funds, what are we doing with this, do we want to do a fundraiser, you know. So it really is just constantly a group effort of communicating. I mean, we have a chat group that we're doing, and we're just constantly, you know,
working on it. Great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing this for KZFR and for our listeners. And I'm glad to get it out there. I'm glad to let people know more about you.
Well, we really
thank you
really
so much.
You reaching out.
Yeah, thank you so much for giving this our program voice and a platform for us to share it.
Good, and I'll let people know we can go back and listen to it over and over again. You can pass it on to people, because I think that's important. You know, you can say, "Hey, go there and you know, listen to who we are," because it comes through. The three of you are amazing, and just listening to you, I hear it. I hear the team effort.
Well,
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, bye now.